Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of The Landing. I'm here with Ben O'Connell.
Here we are.
And Mangus.
Here we are, what's going on?
And we're going to dive into the UFC. There's been a lot of big fights recently, and I've absolutely been violently obsessed. UFC is quickly becoming one of my favourite sports. Kind of, and we're going to get into like what got us into it to begin with. First off, I want to kind of pick the two UFC experts' brains on like what kind of got them into the sport. I don't know, a fight that jumped out or whatnot. So Mangos, can you give me like a couple of anecdotes on like how you got into the sport?
Yeah, so I started with like with a lot of people with Conor McGregor and watching his just like press conferences and him just being so entertaining and talking all the shit and just being like one of the like most charismatic like fighters that I've actually ever seen. And the fight that got me into it was him versus Mendes for the interim featherweight title fight. And that was just like unbelievable. I couldn't believe what I was watching. Then he just kept carrying on even more and more and going at Jose Aldo, who was like the most respected champion for a decade. Nobody talked shit to Jose Aldo, and Conor was just giving him like all the grief, and I was all for it. I loved all the shit talk. And then I went to go to a friend's house to watch the fight just for that main event, and we got there, and then within like 12 seconds he just got in face plant, and I'm like, okay, like, this guy's unbelievable. So I started just only watching his fights. Then the Connor and Nate fights. So the first and second fights were just unbelievable. The first one was hard to watch because Connor just got destroyed. So that was a bit unfortunate.
My least favourite.
And ruins his invincibility aura. And then it just totally turns the world upside
down. Yeah. And then he comes back with even more aggression. And even like in the second fight, same with Nate. Nate always being Nate, just like talking shit back. And those guys just slugging it out. But that fight really got me even more obsessed with it. But the fight that really got me was Conor and Khabib. Conor and Khabib was just because those two guys hate each other. When two people hate each other in a fight, it just makes for a perfect...
And like as a fan, you can easily tell when it's real.
Absolutely.
Because like, it's like so easily.
You could genuinely see at the first press conference that Khabib wanted to kill Conor and vice versa. Like they both wanted them like each other dead. Like it wasn't any like, no ifs or buts about it. Like they wanted to kill each other. So when it, like, and Conor was pushing some of the like a bit of a racial line with Khabib, and I wasn't a fan of that. So I jumped onto Khabib because I did like Khabib.
Jeez.
So I
wanted. How can
to,
you
like,
not?
So I did want Khabib to win that fight, but that card was the one that got me into watching pretty much every single fight, because I had the Derek Lewis, Alexander Volkov, where he finished him in the last like 10-15 seconds with a huge knockout. The co-main event was Anthony Pettis and Tony Ferguson, which was just like one of the most insane fights. It was just 10 minutes of them just scrapping. Like Pettis has got blood coming down his face, like licking blood from his face. Like it was just like two absolute animals going at it. Then to end it, you've got Conor and Khabib. Like, and then Khabib just absolutely mauling him was just, I couldn't believe what I was watching. And then the whole aftermath of it too, the whole brawl.
Yeah.
Like Khabib crazy. jumping in like a genuine eagle against Dylan Danis. And then just all hell breaking loose. And I couldn't believe what I was watching. I'm like, all right, I'm in.
That like Khabib was going to go to jail after that. You thought he would, no way he was ever going to fight again. Like everybody was in such big trouble.
Oh, like.
And naturally everyone's just generally just like completely freaked out by Russians. Yeah. So like, and like when you actually, because you kind of, even though he talks a lot of shit and you believe that he hates a lot, like hated Khabib and whatever, but then you actually see the Russians just going nuts and you're like, all right, this is some real shit. And then like, was the trolley in the window, was that after?
No, that was before. Trolley.
Was that before?
That was before.
Was that the day before the actual card?
There was like, the Khabib was going to fight Tony. Tony Ferguson was booked for the fourth time in a row.
Ally Quinter.
He was going to fight Ally Quinter after Tony got... he did his ACL. He tripped over a wire at the press conference.
Jeez.
He tripped over a wire at the press conference. And then... or like the day before, yeah. On his way to the Wayne's, does his ACL. So then you got him fighting Ally Quinter. And then...
It was Max Holloway first. Then they...
Yeah, it was Max Holloway.
So they got Max Holloway in and they actually cancelled that fight. Because I thought he couldn't make the weight, which was like one of the weirdest reasons to stop a fight.
And then Khabib sort of like started slapping up one of Conor's teammates, who was the Russian hammer, Artem Lobov. Just like slapping him against the fence. So Conor flies in on a private jet with like 30 goons. This is the point where we're supposed to take Conor. Like we loved him 3 years before this.
It just adds to it.
Yeah, like because he owns the MacLife, which is a big like journalism brand. The MacLife can just let him in out the back and then he just runs in with 30 goons, grabs a trolley, just... throws it at the window, cuts Rose Namajunas, cuts Michael Chiesa. They got glass in their eye. They both can't fight.
Yeah, I think that's like the interesting like, about like the fight game as well. Just like, is that much more chaotic than any other sport?
Because they're all meatheads.
And there is so much actual real beef. Like, they're literally like gladiators trying to fight.
Yeah.
But going back to like you getting into Conor McGregor and like that's how it started. It's the same thing. Like, when you get the balance of someone who talks an outrageous amount of shit, but like beautifully, like he's so witty and quick. It's first of all, that's rare for a fighter because as you said, they're meatheads. And then you get the mix with his skill set as well, which he has literally the heaviest hands ever and was knocking people out with the whole Mystic Mac, but the whole like predicting each fight. It was literally just a storm brewing for everyone just to absolutely just get like on the train, just absolutely love it.
The biggest thing about Conor was it wasn't fake. Like when he was talking all this shit, it wasn't like a forced persona. Like you've seen so many people try to like emulate that type of style in boxing and in UFC. And then you can just tell they're like sitting on the stage and they're overthinking everything they're saying. Conor just goes up there and he's wearing his shades and he's just naturally having a good time. He's relaxed and he's just spewing. Like he's just spewing and like he's naturally spewing. It's like why he would have a convo with his mates. And it comes out so naturally and they just can't answer back because meatheads. They got no idea. No
best ever.
Ben, it helps so much though that he's orders of magnitude more popular than everyone else. So the who the fuck is that guy comment?
It just works.
It doesn't work if it's somebody who it doesn't work on.
Yeah. No, but someone's just less, like the most popular guy in the world. Yeah, exactly.
At the time, he was on his way to becoming a proper celebrity.
That's it. Now, Ben, what's your like first fight or like what got you into the sport? Because obviously I work with Ben and like he would like, this is when I was less into it, like on a Monday at work, because obviously the fights are on Sunday our time and he'd just be re-watching the fights in the unit and like, oh, look at this. And I was always like, had a keen eye on it, but like how you get really into it is when you actually care about the fighters fighting. Mm. So I've seen always like thought that you were like super into it, but like what was the kind of the first card or the moment where you're just like, yeah, I love this.
Yeah, so I reckon everybody who listens to this will agree, your algorithm on Facebook is just constantly fights.
Yep.
So I watched in year 11, because we have a spare period in year 11, you know, most of the day you're in classes, but then you get the spare, and so you're just like, nobody does any work. Nobody. And I was in my spare, and Robbie Lawler versus Rory McDonald, and if you're listening to this, trust me, you need to go back and watch it. Watch it from round 3 if you like, if you don't have the time. It's just the most disgusting fight. Yeah. So much blood. It actually turned me off the UFC. I was like, no way. I can do WWE because it's fake. I can't do this sport. It's just disgusting. He's got his lips split all the way to his nose. He's like spitting blood and they're doing a stare down at the end of round 4 and he's like spitting all over everything.
Rory McDonald's nose like
Rory McDonald's
like flat. Yeah. Like he like, probably couldn't breathe from it. Like
from round 2. And like, then they fight another 20 minutes. And I was like, ugh. And then I came back when Ronda, because we're from Melbourne, and Ronda fought in Melbourne against Holly Holm. And again, the Facebook algorithm shows you so many of Ronda's. All you need to do is just grab her and then break her arm. It's that easy. And then we watch Ronda fight Holly Holm, a world champion kickboxer. And then Holly Holm just kicks her in the head. And I was like, what is going on?
It's an insane sport. Like, I reckon like people can deal with boxing. But then like even like when I watch the fights, because now like it's just the GOAT time as well, because on a Sunday
exactly
you're a little bit dusty and you can just put on the UFC card and just like watch it all day. It's kind of just like, I don't know, I get this like weird enjoyment of watching people beat the shit out of each other. But like I watch it with my housemates, like, and Sam and Ethan, just like they're like very off the hammer punches.
Yeah,
it's like
everybody's off the hammer.
It is like it is like straight on the canvas, like they're already out like 95% of the time, and then they just come down, just like bounce your head off the canvas, and like you get like quite desensitized to it. So I understand, like the sport is ridiculous, and like I remember doing a uni like assignment on like kind of like the legal side of UFC, of like if it's like ethical.
Yeah,
and I remember just like understanding all the arguments against it, but like also absolutely loving it, so I would never actually go against it.
The thing about that though is, because there's always two sides to it.
Yeah.
There is actually a counter, is that because they've got 4-ounce gloves, they're not going to just like, with a 10-ounce boxing glove, you'll get hit in the head and it won't make any blood, but your brain will rattle inside. And in boxing, you might go down like 3 or 4 times in a fight, and that's getting hit hard enough in the head that your brain can no longer...
Your brain
just loses the ability to control your legs. You go down and you can do it up to 3 times a round. And so the deaths are in boxing. They're not in the UFC. Because if you get hit in the face with a UFC glove...
you can take less damage.
You can take less damage. You'll break your face before you get concussed.
Yeah.
So,
so much happens. Better.
They break the jawbone. And that's why there's not many deaths. Well, there's no deaths.
That's also...
Touch wood by touching wood in the UFC so far.
It's also interesting, though.
It's just a worse optic.
Considering that you can throw elbows, fighters actually just collapse after a boxing fight, because they do take serious punishment to the head. But I guess they've got the takedown, the jujitsu, they're able to submit. Sometimes they might not even take a punch. They might just be getting mauled for 15 or 25 minutes. So maybe the head damage might be a little bit less. But yeah, it's interesting that nobody's actually died in the cage like there is in boxing.
Generally just and it's also been around for less time as well, though. But also, what I find a bit ironic is that you're able to do those hammer punches off the canvas and whatever, but you're not allowed to kick a bloke in the balls, and you're not allowed to poke someone in the eye.
Yeah,
it just sounds so ridiculous in regards to what you're able to allow the damage to, you're allowed to knee people in the head, do whatever, but for whatever reason, for clear reasons, but you're not allowed to eye gouge someone, even if it's an actual accidental poke.
Yeah, but what's weird with MMA is they have different rules in different organizations. So in one, you can actually knee a grounded opponent. So if anybody watched the Petr Yan Aljamain Sterling fight with Petr Yan, kneed him in the...
Who's Petr Yan?
Petr Yan.
Ah.
Petr Yan and Aljamain Sterling. He kneed him when he was grounded and that got a disqualification. But in one, that would have been just a clean knockout.
Mm.
So it's really weird. In boxing, they don't go have different organizations don't have different rules.
Yeah.
And it is going to evolve just over time because they'll, again, as decades go on, whether it's CTE or whatever, there'll have to be some limitations on what you can do, you've seen that in every sport ever. Look at the concussion rules in the AFL this year. Having the defined, you have to have the next week off. So it's just it's going to change.
Exactly. In the AFL, Joel Selwood, he's been blacked out more times than any professional boxer we would follow. You know, he gets concussed to the extent that he goes unconscious for tens of seconds. Yeah. And his head would be way more fucked than any of...
No question.
Any proper heavyweight boxer.
No question. And the fact that these guys actually get... They've got good concussion protocol in UFC.
They do.
You're out for months. No, you're out for months. You don't train or fight for months if you get properly concussed. Over here, we don't have
Because
that's a different thing. We're going to get to that.
It is a big reputation thing in regards to... Because if someone did die from UFC, it'd be huge for it. It's similar to how Qantas has never had a crash.
Yeah.
It's definitely just...
Has Qantas never had a crash?
Clash. Nah, it definitely probably has by now. I remember my mum just...
Touch wood on that. Let's touch wood on that.
I was a bit scared of flying when I was a bit younger. And mum would always be Qantas has never crashed. which is just the ultimate moz, to be honest. Cheese, mum.
Better freak me out. Don't worry. We have this... this airline's never crashed.
Dead set. But let's get into some more divisional breakdowns. And I think this podcast will be good for anyone that kind of wants to get into the UFC, because hopefully you can see our energy towards the sport and hope that maybe if we give you a bit of a breakdown of what's going on around the league, which is even like league, it's more of a company.
That's the thing. That's the problem.
Organization. That maybe you can jump on and join us for the Dusty Sunday UFC cards, which is the best ever.
Yeah, we need to talk about
one of the great programs. One of the great programs.
Yeah, it is. It is. So let's start with that's because of the card on the weekend. We had Francis Ngannou versus Gan, which for the heavyweight title. So let's start with that. First of all, were you surprised?
No one, I don't think anyone would have expected Francis to wrestle Cyril Garn and look not the best grappler in the world, but good enough to be able to get into a double leg, pick him up, take him down and pin him.
Yeah.
Nobody saw Francis. Everyone just expected the one punch knockout power, which is what everybody's seen from Francis. And considering that it came out after the fight that he was on one leg, and he was still able to wrestle on one leg.
Yeah, it was torn MCL.
Torn MCL.
And injured ACL.
Damaged ACL. Jeez. And damaged and other parts of his knee damaged as well. And he was still able
We'd be violently crying up, not getting into a heavyweight title fight.
And still able to get to Cyril Garn. But it just showed evolution in Francis. Because nobody thought, if anybody's seen the first Stipe Miocic fight, he couldn't do anything on the ground. It was all about a knockout. And if he couldn't get a knockout, he wasn't going to win. Now he's got the whole game and he's one of the most terrifying people I've ever seen in my life.
I reckon he's someone that you look at and you actually said this to me and I was thinking it. But it's just I can't believe that we're the same species as that bloke. if I stood next to him, I would literally look like the smallest, most gangly like bloke in Vic. It's insane. It is insane. His story is incredible as well.
Like, think that we're only seeing him because he was willing to spend like 4 years in Morocco. Just all he was trying to do was just get to wherever you get to from Morocco.
It's Paris.
Yeah, but you got to get into the UK, into the Europe side of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's only because he was willing to do all of that, and you see that many people die, and he was like become the leader of this resistance program.
Yeah.
To get there, like imagine how many people there are in Cameroon,
yeah.
Just waiting. You know, he already looked like he does now.
He's got like the...
He's just genetic freak.
He's got like the movie... Yeah. He's got like the movie script, like, story.
Yeah.
Like, he's like working in sand mines as a kid, like, going through the desert to escape, like, trying like 9 or 10 times on a boat, getting caught, and then eventually being able to get through to Morocco, then eventually being able to get through to Paris.
All of
then
it being homeless.
Then being homeless, and then getting found by a trainer, being like, you should fight. And then just training in a gym, initially for boxing it was.
Yeah.
And then he got into MMA, and then now here he is, and he's just the scariest dude.
Yeah, I can just...
Like, I've never seen a person, like, who's at a similar weight to, like, to another individual in a fight, but look, like, 30 kilos bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the scariest thing I've ever seen. Like, I don't know what he's made of, but he's an absolute monster.
Yeah, he's amazing. I think, like, my reaction to the fight, because obviously, like, there's a lot of carry-on about Garn, like, just like take him to the ground and do what Stipe did in the first fight, like somewhat. Like,
pace him up a little bit. Garn's going to use the striking and the kickboxing.
I think what I kind of learned from Sunday was that Francis is just that much stronger than anyone else in the UFC. To be able to like, and I think that was on display more so than the wrestling. It was more just the pure strength that I just like, the way that like he could just pick him up and move him was like something I just wasn't expecting, because I knew like he had the punch power, whatever, but you kind of don't believe it until you see it. And I think another thing that I thought I wanted Francis to win, but like I thought like Garn was like, I gave him a lot more respect than mate. It's hard to know because you watch the Derek Lewis fight and you're like, oh, like he's just gonna do the kind of like a similar thing to Francis, but then I think with the Derek Lewis fight, just shows that like Derek Lewis has zero tank and literally just can't like go into the later rounds at all. And I think that was like kind of my reaction to it. What was your reaction?
I think Derek Lewis gave up.
Yeah,
because Derek Lewis could not touch Cyril Garn. How can Cyril Garn be 255 pounds, which is like almost 120 kilos, and the way he moves is just so out of this world. It's so light, and so that's what we all thought was. It's so easy to do MMA maths. We love MMA maths. A beats B, B beats C, therefore A... Actually, can't remember how it works, but therefore... if Derek Lewis beats Francis and Cyril Garn smashes Derek Lewis, then therefore, surely, Cyril Garn beats Francis.
Yeah. It's not how it works.
It's just... It never works like that.
But geez, we continue to think it will.
Yeah, and that's what's so compelling about like the matchups.
Yeah.
So... And it was happening, you know, two rounds in, it was going perfectly to plan. Francis Ngannou, he's been training MMA for like 6 years, and then next minute he just grabs him and shoves him to the ground.
We all thought he was gassed.
He was gassed.
He was exhausted. No, but he pushed through it.
He had this burst of strength. It was just, I've never seen it.
Just mental, just genuine mental like perseverance from Francis. And considering that he was on one leg and all the pressure that's gone with into that fight, like all the disputes he's had with the UFC, there was so much pressure going into it. He was able to execute.
And we'll get into that later. But
it's just unbelievable. Yeah, Francis is the man.
We'll be talking about Francis a bit later on, including a Jake Paul conversation, so stay tuned.
We miss it.
So from here, does Stipe get another chance?
So what I think is going to happen is, because Francis is going to be out for a year, I don't think he's going to re-sign with the UFC, because I think he wants that Tyson Fury fight. He wants that big paycheck. And then
let's say he does get another fight.
So Francis fights.
Gets another fight.
I reckon Francis will fight John Jones if he fights.
That makes me so happy.
What about you, Ben?
If John Jones fights.
If John Jones fights,
oh, of course I want that. Yeah. But I would love to see Stipe again.
Stipe definitely deserves it. I know there's no question about it. But what I actually think is going to happen is they're going to strip him, and they're going to do it, or they're going to do an interim with Stipe and John.
Really? Yeah. So Garn has a couple more fights to get back?
Yeah, Garn will fight like a Derek Lewis. Not Derek Lewis, like Curtis Blades or like a...
They can't do another Derek Lewis.
No, nah, Curtis Blades. It would be a Curtis Blades.
No, there's no point.
No, like Garn already destroyed him. It'd be Curtis Blades.
Maybe Curtis Blaydes takes him down, because now we know that he can be taken down.
Yeah,
Curtis Blaydes is right back
in. See how good his wrestling's improved over like a 6 month to a year period, and see if he can actually handle it. Because if that was like a, if he was going against John, like John would just maul him, because John's wrestling's another level.
Which is why I think Stipe is the second best heavyweight, because Stipe can wrestle.
Yeah. Stipe's got the wrestler. Whole game. And he's good, and he's good on the
feet. So funny, you look at Stipe standing next to Francis and you're just like, buddy, no chance. So I had to re-watch the first fight where he won. I was like, wow.
But Stipe, but Stipe was ridiculously lean in that second fight. Like,
235.
Yeah, and Francis is like 265. Like, it was just... like,
and he cuts to 265.
Yeah, and it was... yeah, there you go. So, like, it was just... it's ridiculous. Like, how much bigger... like, I don't know. I could not understand for the life of me why Stipe went in so light. I think he just wanted the cardio to be able to go consistently for five rounds, but... that first fight, he was much like, he was probably like 245, 250. Mm. And he was able to like get Francis down, because he did try to shoot and Francis just had it covered. Like, he was able to sprawl.
There's every chance that Stipe watched that fight on the weekend. It was like, ugh, maybe not. Maybe it's not there.
Nah, see, I don't reckon.
Fighters don't think like that. They're not scared.
Stipe's an animal. Stipe's an animal, man.
I'm scared. Like,
we're scared. That's why
we love Stipe's
a firefighter. Stipe's a firefighter, man. Yeah. Like, that guy's an animal. Like, he'll be able to take Francis again. Like, he wouldn't be scared of that.
Fair enough. But good start with the heavyweight. Let's start with let's go with flyweight after that. So obviously Moreno lost on the weekend. What are your quick thoughts on that fight, Mangos?
Oh, those guys could fight every week. And I would enjoy it every single time. Those guys, like, especially the smaller division, they just got so much explosiveness, and like, they do pack a lot of power in them. Like, you don't think that they do, but like, they hit hard. Mm. And those guys, just for five rounds, were genuinely just
they're like ninjas. Yeah, they're literally terrifying.
Yeah, just like, they can throw like four or five piece combos in like a second. Like, it's so fast. Like, that was just one of the like best flyweight fights, and the flyweight division needs it. Like, they've, apart from like Cejudo and Demetrius Johnson, they've had nobody like that could carry that division. Now they've got genuinely two dudes who are legit.
And the problem is, there's not really that much of a third option.
There's a few coming through. So there's Askarov. Askarov is a monster. He's fighting Kai Kara France in a couple months. That's gonna be a good fight. I think there's Manu, like Barpe, I think he's coming through.
Mm.
He's a monster. There's the vision's good. The vision's looking real nice.
I love Moreno. I was very cutty last.
I love both. I honestly like both guys. I love Figueroa. But Moreno's just like the happy, dude, nice guy.
He loves it.
Yeah, just every, like, you can't hate that dude.
So we're saying this with our analyst hats on after watching all three fights, but like, at the start, when we first get into it, the compelling thing is that the Morenos have a big, long lineage of... okay, long lineage, I'm carrying on. But the whole Moreno family, they're pinata makers. And Davidson Figueiredo is like from a hairdressing family. And here you go. They're both active. Like, they, Moreno, they don't make that much money before they start fighting for the title. So Moreno was still making pinatas in the lead up to that fight. Yeah. And Figueiredo was still cutting hair.
Yeah.
You know, they blew up in 2020, but before that, you know, you got 30 years of...
it is crazy.
And it's like, just so... it's hilarious.
It's crazy. It is crazy. Like, and then we've already talked about Francis' story.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, like, Connor, was he a plumber?
Yeah.
Was he a plumber? Yeah, and, like, there's all these, like, kind of these...
there's rags to riches. It's it'll never get old.
And we'll get into it after, like, when we kind of talk about the, like, kind of pay side of UFC and, like, how it kind of, like, kind of somewhat takes advantage of people with less... like wealth and money, it can kind of, because it's an easy fix if you can be good at it. Should we move on to let's go to the card beforehand?
Oh yeah, we should talk about
that. Yeah. So that was
Oliveira,
mid December or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oliveira Poirier.
Yeah, Oliveira
UFC Poirier. 269.
I was extremely happy with that fight because, again, I'm a Conor McGregor fanboy, so like, I was just like, so against Dustin, like, please lose, mate.
No, we want Dustin to win to validate Connor's loss so he can come back easier.
Jeez, we're sad, Ben. So sad. But I was extremely happy with Oliveira. Like, first of all, he's a legend.
Yeah. Oh, ripper.
And we were talking about this, like, it's interesting how the Brazilians are always just so crafty and just like so skillful and just like to have so much flair and just like bounce about them. It's so interesting.
Just so like respectful, but then also put on an absolute show.
Yeah, exactly. So I was extremely happy with that. So let's get into the lightweight division. So Oliveira, it got announced today that he's fighting Gaethje in May. Ben,
so excited.
First thoughts on that fight?
I have absolutely no idea. There's no way of figuring it out. But if you look at Oliveira, he's on a 9-fight win streak. 10-fight win streak.
I will also say, to preface this, Ben, I've asked him for his opinion on the last maybe 6 fights, and he's 0-6. So, like, although he's a UFC expert, he knows all the history and whatnot. So don't punt on Ben's words.
It's hard to pick fights.
I'm going to talk pure data here. So you look at
Oliveira. A beats B.
No, Oliveira was on a 10-fight win streak, and 9 of them are finishes. But really, when he fought Tony Ferguson, he ripped Tony Ferguson's arm off, and Tony Ferguson was toast for the rest of the fight. He's on a 10-fight win streak. He's got the most submissions in UFC history by, like, 2 now. Almost the most finishes. And it's really easy to sleep on him, because in his first 18 fights, he went 10 wins, 8 losses. And
Which is really, like, bad.
It's terrible.
If you're 1-for-1, or close to it, yeah. You're not, like, going anywhere.
Unless your name is Nate Diaz. Yeah. Or Nick Diaz.
But then that's the more like marketing of you, of just being the ultimate meathead as opposed to,
But there's so many fights where Oliveira gave up early. But you can't look at those fights. You have to look at him recently. And I can't even got words for him. He's insanely good.
You just got to look at this winning streak. Like, the mindset's completely changed. Like, he's gone out there and just to finish. Not to just, like, go out. To, like, get through the fight and be like, I just want to get through it and get to a decision. Like, he's getting people's necks, and once he gets a neck or he gets an arm, like, that's it. Him versus Gaethje is just like I see that similar to Gaethje Khabib, like, in my opinion.
Me too.
Because Oliveira's got that level of grappling. Like Gaethje can throw, like, serious bombs.
And he can wrestle.
I think the best part of Oliveira's development has been his ability to take a shot as well.
Exactly.
100%.
Moving up weight.
Yeah, exactly. Like I kind of, like, thought he had just a pretty, like, weak chin, but I think after the, was it Gaethje? No, it wasn't Chandler. Dude, Chandler, I swear he never wins, but he always just gets in these hectic brawls.
Puts on an exciting fight.
Sorry, go on.
So with Oliveira, too, I'll mention, like, people were sleeping on his, like, knockout power. Like, if you watch the Gaethje and Chandler fight,
that was an amazing fight.
That went 15 minutes.
That reminded me of the Mendes fight. Conor Mendes.
That was a 15-minute slugfest, and Oliveira knocked out Chandler in the second round within 15 seconds of the second round. Like, so Oliveira, like, could not be slept on any facet, in, like, on the feet or on the ground. But if Gaethje can hit him with that, like, with that left hook, like, he will go down.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, he will go down. Like, it doesn't matter what chin you have. Like, you're going down. That's a huge punch. But Gaethje's wrestling's more defensive.
Exactly.
And he's, like, he's pretty good at, like, a quick sprawl. But someone at, like, Oliveira's level, it's, like, similar to Khabib. Like, he'll know how to, like, counter a sprawl.
Yeah.
Like, Oliveira. And once Oliveira's got you, you see what happens to anybody if Oliveira's got you. Like, you're gone.
How he got onto Dustin's back in that.
He just slid.
And that was at the start of the round as well.
Yeah.
I thought that was just so incredible how he just did that. It was like that. And then
shot in for a takedown and just, like, went around his back within, like, the whole flow of emotion. It wasn't just, like, a takedown waiting and then, like, trying to get his back.
Because the first round, I definitely thought Dustin was looking pretty good. Like, he had some nice shots, and then, like, it kind of just flipped.
Dustin was looking good on the feet, but I think Oliveira was buying his time to be able to, like, get the takedown. And he knew he had an advantage because Poirier's... Don't get me wrong, Poirier's a black belt. Like, Poirier's a...
And he's been a black belt.
Aren't they all black belt?
No, but there's, like, levels. There's levels to black belt. And Oliveira's, like... Like,
he's the best grappler we've ever seen.
Yeah, he's like the, like, Damian Maia, like, Gilbert Burns, like, level. Like,
no, he's like, don't even put him in the same sentence as Gilbert Burns.
Gilbert Burns is a monster. Like, Gilbert Burns is world champion, but, like,
Ben Askren's.
Yeah, they're in,
he's actually a very good black belt too.
But they're like, his grappling is just something else. Like, so if he can get onto Gaethje, like, Gaethje's done. Gaethje doesn't have the jiu-jitsu to be able to keep up with
Oliveira.
I'll get Oliveira.
They often say that wrestling is the best base for the UFC because wrestling can counter jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
So Gaethje, there's a Olympic wrestler from the US called Jordan Burroughs. He's got 2 gold medals, and he really, really could have won at Tokyo if he wanted to do it, but he didn't. He's the best wrestler of all time by far, and he couldn't take Gaethje down. Because Gaethje's that good at defensive wrestling.
And if you've got the striking power of Gaethje with good defensive wrestling, like, that's pretty nice. Like,
good recipe, but it also just shows how good Khabib is as well. Yeah. Be able to, like, get Gaethje down.
Yeah, you can't look at the Khabib fight as a trajectory for any other fight because
But I actually see Oliveira's grappling in that level. Like, I feel like Oliveira's that good. Like, like he showed in the Tony Ferguson fight that he can, like, wrestle. Like, he just got into a double on Tony and picked him up and dumped him.
Yeah.
Like, nobody picks up and dumps Tony Ferguson. He's a Div 1 All-American wrestler as well. Like, that's nothing. It's no joke either. Like, he just dumped him. Like, he's got that, like, wrestling, and he's got the best jiu-jitsu in the UFC. So, I feel like if he grabs him, like, he's got no chance. Like, nobody really does have a chance if he grabs him.
Well, there's no evidence of it.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
In the last 10 fights.
And so from here, so first of all, quickly I want to ask, like, so Dustin, where does he go from here? Like, obviously him and Diaz have been throwing shots at each other online. Is that the fight? But obviously Diaz has one more fight, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And Mangos thinks that it's going to be Connor. So if they can't fight, who does Dustin fight?
See, I think Dustin wants big fights. After that Connor fight, I think he just wants to get like big paychecks and then like ride off into the sunset, regardless if there's a belt involved or not. So I could see, honestly, depending on the Covington and Masvidal fight, maybe if Covington gets up, those two don't like each other. So if he mauls
Dustin Covington,
Dustin and Covington
Covington's like a lighter.
Yeah, he is.
He's a lighter, but Dustin's a big boy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so they can't meet. Yeah, it's like a good, like...
Dustin should realistically be at 170 at the moment. Like, he's
a pig.
He's a huge man.
Yeah. But he's so wide.
Those two don't like each other as well. So if Covington, like, mauls Masvidal, then I reckon in the next fight for Covington would be Poirier.
It shows the Conor effect that if Conor fights you twice, which is what happened last year, then you can ride off into the sunset no matter what. He doesn't have to ever cut weight ever again.
It'd be so hard to go back down.
Get that paycheck.
Like, down to like a normal fight.
Yeah, exactly.
You want those $1 million paychecks. Yeah. Throwing your way.
What do you think for, first of all, Islam?
Islam?
Thoughts on Islam. And can you give me 30 seconds on how he, like, why is there that, like, this hype about around him and why does everyone kind of seem to be scared of him? Ben or who?
Yeah, I'll go.
Yeah.
So with Islam, he definitely fights different to Khabib. There's a big thing in MMA where if people are from the same gyms, people put more weight on how good people are if they fight at the same gym. So
just because I shoot hoops with LeBron James doesn't make me LeBron James.
Exactly. Yeah.
But the way that Russian Muslims work is just on another level. They, you know, Khabib lived in his dad's house. There's a gym at the bottom, and that's where they all train. Like, Khabib's dad was the coach of every Dagestani fighter. Dagestan and Chechnya are like in the Caucasus in Russia. And they're not like friends, they're like brothers. And all they do is train. All day, every day. And so Islam, although he doesn't fight like Khabib, he's probably as good as Khabib, maybe not quite as explosive. And then he can strike. He's like a modern day Khabib. Like, he knocks people out.
Like, so what, like, why he's got so much hype is he's got that grappling, and like a lot of guys at his gym at AKA, they say that he's got just as good of grappling as Khabib. So when they're like sparring, like, his grappling is like on the same level and like just as good. Like, apparently you haven't seen like 10% of what he can do with grappling because he's just that much better than everybody else. Plus, he's a more crisp striker. He's got better kicks. He's got better punches. Like, he's got knockout power in his feet and his hands. So he's got the whole package. It's not just like the grappling, it's the hands as well.
So how does he get into it? Does he fight? Like, where does he get, like, kind of, like, what's his title run look like?
So he's got Dariush next in a couple months. So if he beats, if he wins, he definitely gets the winner of Oliveira and Chandler.
100%.
Gaethje.
Even if he doesn't finish him.
No question. He's the next in line. Like, he's on
10 fight.
Yeah, he's on a 9-10 fight win streak as well. Like, he's only lost one fight in the UFC.
And it was
like,
by knockout, which, again, speaks to why it's so compelling, because you really don't have any idea what's going
to happen. Exactly. Someone that good. Like,
you can still get knocked out.
Yep. Exactly. Like, he's just got that. He's got that Khabib pedigree with grappling, but he's got the striking. So it's just like, what do you do? Like, try and keep distance from him. He can do that.
Yeah.
And if you want to try and get a shot on him, he's just going to get to your legs, and then that's it. Like, you saw what he did to Dan Hooker.
Mm.
You know, Dan Hooker took it on short notice. Like, he just mauled Dan Hooker. Not many people mauled Dan Hooker.
Nobody can. Dustin Poirier couldn't put him away in five rounds. He mauled. Yeah.
Yeah. Grabbed him in the first round and just got a Kimura and that was it. Like, it was, he's on another level. Like, he's on another level as well. He's scary. He's very scary.
Okay, and we'll do a little bit of a segment on Connor after the breakdowns, because he deserves his own segment.
Absolutely.
On that card was Amanda Nunes versus Juliana Pena. First of all, that was one of the more unwell fights I've ever seen.
We watched it together.
Yeah, I could not believe what I was watching. Joe Rogan said it was like the biggest upset in the sports history.
It's definitely up there.
Awesome fight as well. Like, that second round I've rewatched that like 3 or 4 times.
Slugfest.
It's literally incredible, because it's the same way that, like, I'm somewhat used to it now, unfortunately, but with like Connor, when you saw him get knocked out, you're not used to it, so you kind of like don't understand what's going on. Seeing Amanda Nunes getting like beaten up is just so bizarre, because you're just so not used to it. So do you think, so obviously they're going to fight again, what do you reckon happens in that division, Ben?
It's easy to say that it'll go exactly the way we thought it was going to go the first time, because it was in the second round that slugfest happened, and in the first round, if it wasn't a 10-8, it was a bloody dominant 10-9 to Amanda.
Yeah.
So that's what you'd think, but Amanda has lost in the past. She lost to Kat Zingano and somebody before that. It was before I started watching the UFC. And Amanda does get tired, and she does have a problem with wrestlers, even though the second round wasn't a wrestling fight.
It was stand-up.
It was all stand-up.
I swear, it was just pressure. Amanda just couldn't land anything. Juliana's like, every strike was just knocking, and you just saw the life just going out of Amanda's face, and you're like, is this actually about to happen?
Well, I think this is the thing when you're that dominant, like, you see it all, like the best, like, she's like the greatest like female fighter of all time. You can make an argument for her, or like Valentina Shevchenko.
But
like, when you're that dominant and you just put like girls away that easily, like, you just got one round and you can just like few punches and that's it. When you got someone who's throwing back and hitting you, you probably, like, if you haven't actually felt that feeling in like 6 or 7 fights, you're like, what's going on? Like, how do I react?
Mm.
And she just panicked. And Joanna Pena, like, said everything that she was going to do. She's going to put pressure on her and she was going to break her. And it's exactly what she did. And I honestly feel like it's going to happen again the second time.
I'm very wary to say that it's going to go the opposite.
Really?
Yeah, because
I also reckon, like, there's the classic kind of like champion fatigue. Of like, when you've won so many, you kind of like, naturally, you're not going to improve as much, because like, you don't really have anything to improve on, especially the way that Amanda Nunes has carried herself the last, what, 4 or 5 years? Mm. Three.
Motivation.
Like, yeah, exactly.
What do you need to prove when you're the double champ for like 3 years?
Exactly. So yeah, I'm extremely keen to see that fight.
It's like the John Jones effect. When John Jones fights Daniel Cormier, the Olympic wrestler, he puts him away the first time. And then when there's pressure on him the second time, after Daniel Cormier has just become the champion and defended it, you know, 3 times, he knocks him out. And when he fights Alexander Gustafsson the first time, he loses a split decision. But the second time, when the pressure's on, he knocks him out.
Yeah.
But then, again, John Jones finished on a bit of a topsy-turvy
at heavyweight
because he was fighting people where we knew he was going to win. He was such a big favourite.
And he knew it too.
So I reckon that happens to Amanda. It happens when people...
It's natural. It's just a natural human instinct. When you get that good, you just get comfortable, and you feel like you're just going to be at that like elite level for so long that like nobody can touch you. And then it gets to a point where this is fighting. Like, someone will get you at some point.
And like, there's so many different people who like were talking about their stories and how they get there. Like, there's so many interesting fighting stories of how they got there. That naturally, if you don't have that fire in your belly, it like, and over time, once you make it, it's hard to maintain that fire, as we've seen with Connor, and like, obviously, like, Francis is still on the top, but like, they lose their kind of like fire, and then they start to
100%.
Lose. A big thing George St. Pierre said when he was champion was that when you're the champion, you're not going to study all of the contenders as hard as all the contenders are obsessed with you. You know, like, if you're already a fighter, you're already just a hyper obsessed, probably autistic person who just gets unbelievably obsessed with the way, you know, all the footage.
It's so
hard to defend the championship, especially for 3 years, when Juliana Pena, like 3 years ago, would have been a completely different fighter, and she would have molded her entire game to Amanda.
And if you think about it from Juliana Pena's perspective, she's just going in there being like, Amanda is the target. And she's got that for years. And she's been training for that for years, and that would fuel her like twice a day when she's training. Amanda's got, like, she's going up divisions, she's been fighting.
She's starting out. Like, she's looking to, like, make her legacy where Amanda's already got hers.
She wants that big paycheck.
Yeah.
Amanda's already had, like, 8-9 big paychecks. Like, she's had super fights. Yeah. She had the Ronda Rousey fight, the Chris Cyborg fight. Like, she's had huge fights. So, by it gets to a point where she's like, oh, I'll just do it for a paycheck. Like, because she, if you're not all in for the fight, you're not going to win the fight. Definitely. Like, you need to be 100% dedicated to your opponent. And you could tell clearly that she wasn't. She clearly didn't take Joanna Pena seriously as a contender.
We've seen it happen with Tyron Woodley when he started a rapping career and started doing all those movies.
Yep.
You've seen it with Ronda Rousey when she started doing all the movies. You get distracted. Amanda Nunes has got a family now. Like, she just had a daughter.
I was about to say that. Like, it's interesting to say, we probably don't have too much time to talk about, but how kids would have an effect on, like, your ability to actually fight and beat someone up, because you're just, like, more wary of your health and your ability, like, you needing to be for you. Let's not get into it. We're banning that right now.
Yeah,
because that would just go for too long.
Yeah.
And then, so let's talk about a girl that's very dear to our hearts, Rose, in the strawweight division.
Thug Rose.
I'm so on her. She,
the legend. Why, though? The legend.
I'm just so in her. I reckon she's just a sweetheart of the USA. She's lovely.
She's an angel.
So talk us through her last fight, which I can't... Who did she fight again?
Wei Li Zhang, the rematch.
Yeah, yeah.
And the first fight was... So Wei Li Zhang is just... Like, she was like 22-1, but she like lost her debut, so she was like 20 in a row, and she's the classic... You know how there's a big stigma with like scary Russians, and now the modern day one of that is scary Chinese people.
Yeah.
And... Wei Li Zhang, she was 115 pounds, but she's literally built like somebody who's 135 pounds.
Truck.
And she's so much stronger than everybody by a country mile.
Yeah, you can see the muscles just popping out of her body. Like, she's so big.
And so when we watched her and Rose is like a proper 115 pounds, but she's unbelievably skilled, which makes her such a fan favorite.
Yeah.
So you just think like, oh, I really, really don't want to see Rose get her face smashed in. And then she just like... She knocks her out with a head kick. And so that's why the rematch was amazing.
Yeah, those two fights were brilliant, because the first one was just like a great head kick from Rose.
Reminds me of Fig and Marino.
Yeah.
Kind of. It does. Similar vibe to it.
It's got a similar story. She went and trained with Cejudo as well. Same with Figueiredo. Like, and she used a lot of wrestling, and she actually did a really good job in that second fight, implementing wrestling and being able to like keep Rose down for the first couple rounds. But Rose is like, people don't see her grappling that much because she's so good on the feet. Like, she's a really good grappler, and she showed that to her, and she got her wrestling out as well in that fight. And that was a really good fight, and I hope they fight like a third time. Like,
cause I would feel so nervous.
Because that's a great trilogy UFC's got there. Like, they're both like so good and so marketable. Rose is just like the nicest person of all time. You wouldn't know she was a fighter.
No,
you just see her like kicking people's heads off, and you're like, holy, like, oh my god! Like,
I think she's the most talented fighter in the UFC right now.
She's got like some of the best skill set. Her movement.
Her boxing.
It's actually funny. It's probably like her and Valentina Shevchenko have like the best movement on the field.
Oh yeah, true.
There is
Valentina.
Like, yeah, like they just like they're just so light, and they just like they're able to like stay like just like
so same.
Yeah, there's no like massive exertion of energy. Like, it's all efficient. Like, it's all like so crisp. Like, there's no thrown, like, looping punches. Like, everything's so, like, just straight. Technical and, like, straight. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on. We've been able to pick up the pace on these divisions, boys. We're carrying on a lot.
Yeah, boys.
So let's get to the middleweight. So obviously you've got Adesanya Whittaker coming up.
One of the best fight of the year. That's fight of the year.
Really?
In my opinion, yeah. Love that
fight. Really? That's the title fight. So Adesanya beat Whittaker last fight. What are your quick thoughts on that?
I was there, unfortunately. UFC 243 in Melbourne. Devastating, really, because...
Unfortunately, I wish I was there.
Yeah, Whittaker, yeah, like, he did get right knocked out at welterweight by Wonderboy, Stephen Thompson. But then he goes up to middleweight and looks invincible.
Yeah.
I mean, he fights Yoel Romero, who's now lost a few times, but he fought him for 10 rounds and...
But he fought him back then when he was an animal.
Yeah, and he's just incredible.
Yeah.
So we just figured... And he was still the favorite going into the fight, but now we realize. If we didn't know, now we know how good Adesanya is. Oh. So who wins the fight? Who wins the fight?
Again, for the viewers, go for the opposite of who Ben picks, because that's who's going to win it.
Whittaker's going to win again. Well, he's going to get it back.
So this is... I love this fight and I hate this fight, because it's probably like two of my favorite fighters. I love Israel Adesanya and I love Robert Whittaker. I think Robert Whittaker in the first fight like saw what Kelvin Gastelum did and thought he could like knock him out like by going in there and lunging in and real thinking he could hit, he could clip it. But Izzy's just probably the best kickboxer in the UFC.
So, in UFC history.
You can't just lunge in there and hope to hit him. Like he's a sniper. Like and you saw him knock him down in the second round. So this fight, I feel like Whitaker's like worked on his grappling. If you like the last fight he had with Calvin Gastelum, like he was mauling Calvin Gastelum, and that's pretty hard to do. Calvin Gastelum's hard to like genuinely take down, and Whitaker was doing a really good job with it, and like he showed some grappling. And like it's easier said than done. Like you can go, oh yeah, like look what Jan Błachowicz did. Like, but I think Whitaker's going to try and do a similar thing. When he takes him down, he's going to try and bring him to the middle of the cage, and so Izzy can't use the cage to get back up. So Whitaker can use his like his elite jujitsu and try and like get it. Try and like just ground and pound him or get a submission.
Izzy can get taken down by Marvin Vettori, and Marvin Vettori is a very poor man's Robert Whittaker.
Yeah, 100%. And Whittaker's a much better technical striker than Marvin Vettori. So it's just a great fight all around, and like I'm honestly don't want like someone to lose that fight.
Well, I can't believe you guys like Adesanya.
I love Adesanya.
I'm so off him.
He's the man.
Moving on, welterweight. I can ball on one of my favorite divisions. I think Usman is just an absolute beast.
Pound for pound.
He's a freak, absolute freak. And obviously, I was very proud that Covington lost. That was one of my favourite fights I've ever watched, I reckon, that rematch. What do you think? So, it's obviously going to be Covington, Masvidal. I think Covington absolutely mauls Masvidal.
Yep.
What happens with that division? Because Usman's just such a clear on top. Like, what happens? Who's Usman fight? Does he have to go up?
So, it's going to depend on the Whitaker and Adesanya fight. So if Whitaker wins, and if Israel wants to take a little bit of time off before he has a trilogy fight, Usman will go up and fight Whitaker because he says he doesn't want to fight.
They're both Nigerian, and they're
good friends. So I don't think they actually want to fight each other. So I think that's the main reason stopping him from actually going up a weight division. Just because at 170, like Usman's pretty much just destroyed everyone at 170. There's no one for him, like unless maybe Jared Cannonier and the
Jared Cannonier. He's at 185.
Surely Edwards gets a chance. Oh no, Jared Cannonier's 185. Does Edwards get a chance?
Edwards has got the next title shot. But the only problem with that is like the wrestling. Like nobody can stop Kamaru Usman. Maybe Colby Covington's probably the only one, but Kamaru Usman can take anybody down whenever he feels like
it. And Covington's relying on like a knockout or like a out wrestling, but Usman's too strong.
Way too strong.
Yeah, so it doesn't really work.
Like Leon will go into that fight thinking that he can outstrike him, but like the strides he's made in the striking, like that knockout of Masvidal is like one of the filthiest knockouts.
It got knockout of the year. Yeah, not that means anything.
Yeah, but it's just his improvement in the striking. Like you watch from the first Covington fight when he's just throwing and hoping. Now you actually see him, like he's like a genuine striker. Like he knows how to feint. He knows what he's seeing. Like he knows how to counter. Like he's one of the scariest dudes on the roster as well. Like, there's a reason he's pound for pound. Like he's on like what, like a 14-15 fight win streak as well. Like hasn't lost in UFC. It's crazy. He's an animal.
I think that also ties back to what we're saying about what's so compelling about people fighting from the same gyms. So we knew that Usman, we thought Usman might have been good because he starts working with Trevor Whitman, who also coaches Justin Gaethje and also coaches Rose. And all three of them have taken massive strides in their striking. Yep. They're the best strikers in their divisions.
Yeah, 100%.
And so we were just like, oh, I wonder what he's going to do with Usman. And then boom.
You just see like it was
knocks out George Masvidal
He knocked out Gilbert Burns with a jab.
Yeah.
He just dropped him. Like it's just like, it's insane. Like he's the levels he's taken, like from just being the person that just pins you down for five rounds like he kind of did against Woodley. So what he's doing now is like with the technical striking, it's something else. Like he's gonna reign over 170, and it's unlucky because if he wasn't there, Covington would probably be the champ, and that'd be Covington's division if it wasn't for Kamaru.
Covington's in that weird like middle ground where he doesn't fit into a perfect division, so he probably won't win a title. But don't you reckon?
He certainly couldn't be 185. He can't be 155.
So he's kind of stuck in that middle ground where he just doesn't.
He needs like a 165 division, but I don't think UFC wants to do 165 pound division. But he's a tweener. It's just unlucky for him because he's like one of the best fighters in the world.
He
probably deserves to be a champion with how marketable he is as well. Like. How funny he is as well.
There may be no one for Usman now, but I guarantee you there will be. All those top five, they just need to lose to someone like a Sean Brady.
Yeah.
You know, 8-0 right now. I think that's a lie. I don't know what he is, but I know that he's undefeated. and he's under 10-0. Well, there's, you know, there's a lot of people like that that are coming through. There's 600 of them in the UFC.
We just haven't seen them yet.
There's Chimaev. I just can't think of Chimaev. Chimaev will be the champion in 2022. Mark my words. There's a rumor he's going to fight Gilbert Burns. So if he beats Gilbert Burns, he'll get a title shot. And he's like, some of the stories that like you hear from his gym, like Alexander Gustafsson talks about him. Like he only spars with light heavyweights. Yeah. Everyone else like can't handle him because he's too much.
Mm.
And he knocks out light heavyweights. Like this is like, and Usman's a big 170 pounder and Chimaev's huge as well. Yeah. So if there's going to be anyone that matches like wrestling and striking, would be that dude. But we actually got to see him like beat a top five person first until we just chuck him in there with like a pound for pound.
Mm.
Like we've got to see him do work first, which I honestly think he definitely could, but we've got to see it first. Once we see it, then that would be, I think that would get Usman like fired up.
Oh, 100. That would be amazing.
It'd be a huge fight. He's got a big draw.
Get that this year?
Maybe
late?
If not this year, early next year.
Okay, we'll take it. I'll look forward to it. We really need to pick up the pace, boys. So I'm going to give Mangos 1 minute. Do you want, Mangos, do you want bantam, feather, or light heavy?
Bantam.
Yeah, what do you want?
We don't have to talk about all of them. We can talk about, what did you say they were?
Take bantam and feather, because I reckon light heavy's boring. So, Mangos, yeah, go definitely. Bantam.
So this is probably my
favorite. You have 1 minute.
So this
time probably, starts now.
Alright, so this is probably my favorite division. Yeah. So they've got the Peter Yan, Aljamain Sterling title fight in April. Which I think Peter Yan's going to win. And then the winner of that will probably get TJ Dillashaw. And if TJ, who's coming off knee surgery, so he might not be ready to go for a while, there's Jose Aldo waiting in the wakes. Like,
how is he still there? Like,
yeah, he's unbelievable. He loves it. He just destroyed Rob Font. And Rob Font's like no joke. Like it's unbelievable, that division. There's Sean O'Malley. I love Sean O'Malley. I'm a fan of him. He's got to prove that he can beat someone in the top 10 first. Like, but there's still like Dominic Cruz still doing it. Like there's the Devishelli, I think his name is.
Davishvili. Yeah, he's insanely good.
Marlon Moraes. Like the guy's just got like wrestling and like cardio for days. Like he's another animal. Like that division is just like is firing right now at the moment. And if once we get like a conclusion to Yan and Sterling, which hopefully comes soon rather than later, I'm getting sick of all the drama behind that. We can finally get to see some fights because Peter Yan's probably like one of the best fighters to watch in the UFC. He's just so technical. Like he breaks you down, and then by like the fourth and fifth round, like you're just his mercy, and he's just like throwing punches at you. So him and Dillashaw's a fight. I would love to see him, and like he already fought Aldo, but I would love to see him fight Aldo again because I think Aldo's fired back up. He's won a few fights in a row against some good contenders, so that'd be fucking good to see.
Hectic. Nice work, Mangos. Ben?
Okay, feather. Well, I'm not going to talk about all the rankings at featherweight, but I will talk about Alexander Volkanovski, fellow Australian. Oof. Such a pig. But he was... Basically, all we're really doing is waiting for him to fight Holloway for a third time, even though he won twice already. We just still seem to think that Holloway... Because when Holloway wins, he's so dominant. Like, he can throw more strikes than the opponent breathes. Like, they've actually done the stats. He lands more strikes than the opponent breathes. He'll throw 700... significant strikes in a fight.
Crazy.
He is insane. But somehow Alexander Volkanovski has his number. So Volkanovski's now going to fight the Korean Zombie, who's like Chan Chong Jong. But yeah, he
Chan
goes
Chan Chong Jong.
Yeah, but they call him the Korean Zombie, and that'll be a great fight, but there's just no way that Chan Chong Jong can beat him. So it'll be Volk, and then Brian Ortega needs to fight somebody good, and
Rodriguez.
It's an amazing division, featherweight. 64 kilos. It's the best ever. It's like the perfect combination of speed and... I think maybe that and lightweight are the perfect combination of speed and strength, like where they can still knock each other out.
So deep.
But even then, like, the whole thing about 125 is that Figueiredo knocks people out. He makes them go to sleep. Yeah. Like, so the game has evolved so well.
100%.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great breakdown, boys. All right, we've got two more topics. First of all, Conor McGregor. What's his way out? How does he get back to the promised land? As Conor McGregor fanboys, geez, I love him so much. And he's like, as you heard at the start of our episode, like, it's the reason why like we kind of got into it, because how could you not? Like, he took the world by storm.
It's Mystic Mac.
I'm so on him. How does he get out from where he is right now?
So Conor's just got to want to do it. because Conor's like obviously got the it's an easy thing to say that like he's made the money and like motivation's not there, but it really is. Like you see the guys that want to like get to his position, they're like scrapping. Like they don't have like the yachts, they don't have like the hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank, like
the planes.
Like he's got everything there to be like to get back to that top level. It's just if he wants to do it. Like, don't get me wrong, like there's the game's evolved from when he was there. Like the calf kick wasn't there when he was at his best. Like
exactly.
So there's different elements to what he needs to incorporate into his game. But if he can actually incorporate those elements, and I think the UFC would like give him the right fights to get him back to that position. So
well, he's earned that right to have an easier pathway.
Absolutely earned that right. Like with the amount of money that he's brought into the company, he's allowed to do whatever he wants. So if he'll probably, in my opinion, will fight Nate in it'll be the main event in International Fight Week in July. And that'll probably be the pay-per-view.
I think that's too soon. That's only a year after having his leg snapped.
Well, they reckon July. I reckon July will be his like return, and he's going to be in full training in April. That's what he said.
That's such a Conor thing. And to then say. After he's that, such a marketer.
But who knows? Does he get a title fight after that?
Oh, he gets a title fight if he wins. He brings too much money into the sport. Like he has to.
Yeah, but when you say what's his way out, there's no way out, buddy. There's no way. He's not good enough anymore.
Yeah, I think so.
He doesn't beat Islam. Islam's going to be the champion. But again, that is me.
It kills.
It is. It does kill. I hate destroying dreams. I go to bed dreaming about it, but I can't see
him beating. Do you think he fights Nate next?
He does fight Nate next, and then he just fights super fights until he's retired. He's going to be 34 by then. That's not that old. I mean, we didn't talk about light heavyweight, but the champion is 42. Although that is crazy. That's the oldest champion by a country mile. But like, it does go to show that people can have a peak and then they can re-peak. And then they can re-peak. How old's Aldo?
Maybe like
Aldo's 35.
Oh.
Aldo's just been doing it for so long.
Yeah.
But with Conor, like, I do agree with some of the matchups in the lightweight division are not like favorable to him. Like Dariush isn't a good matchup for him. Markachev's not a good matchup for him. Like there's guys like that can just implement their grappling on him. But if the right matchup's there, like if Gaethje beats Oliveira, And Conor wins whoever, like if it's Diaz or whoever he fights next, that's a pretty, Gaethje's a pretty good matchup for Conor. Like I wouldn't like guarantee a win, but it's going to be on the feet. Like it's going to be a striking fight. That's what Conor wants.
Yeah,
there's no way Gaethje's going to shoot. For the legs, no chance. Those guys are going to be slugging it. So it just depends on the matchup. But regardless of who's the champion, Conor's going to get the title fight just because like. He's the only person in the UFC that can bring a million pay-per-views just like that.
I also reckon, like, clearly you've lost faith in him, Ben. But, like, if he is, like, I mean, he was, like, the best ever, like, we're looking at it through, like, kind of recency bias, where, like, he could just turn it on again and just fire up, please.
Like, if you look at Eddie Alvarez, when he beat Eddie, Conor's
distance... Very, very hard to do, but if he wants, like, it's hard to be the like title champion. Like, of course it is. So like, you know what I mean? Like,
No doubt.
I know that sounds like pretty obvious, but like that's if like oh no shit, he has to be good.
Yeah.
Like he just has to turn it on, please.
For when?
To win the title.
Yeah. If he fights Gaethje, he could eat his distance management shits all over Gaethje's.
That's the thing. Like,
and that's all there is to it. I mean, look what he did to Eddie Alvarez. Eddie Alvarez fought like a potato in that fight. Or Conor just made him look like a potato in that fight. But really, it's just because Conor's boxing is that good.
The distance control is just like he's probably the best. He's probably one of the best in the UFC, like UFC history at like maintaining a distance. It's like Israel Adesanya, John Jones, like people who are able just to not get hit. And then Conor's best, like the Eddie Alvarez fight, is probably the best example of it, where he just didn't like barely got touched, and was just throwing like three or four punches to Eddie's one like looping overhand right. Like it was, but. Like as I say that, the game's evolved now to where these guys have got much better striking like all round. But I still feel like I know like we could say like motivational like for Conor is like the only thing, but he just needs to be in the gym like he was when he was like coming up, like when he was the plumber, and he was wanting to get to that point of being like what he is now. He just needs to like if he wants to be that person again, he just needs to refine that fire.
Definitely.
And who knows if he can, but he's definitely got the skills. Like people still like they talk a lot of shit about him, But he's knocked out some of the best fighters in the UFC. Like, Chad Mendes is no joke. Like, Jose Aldo only loses to champions. Like, he only loses to champions. Mm. Like, he's lost to, what, Max Holloway.
Yeah.
Like, Connor. Alexander Volkanovski, yeah. Connor, and Petr Yan, who are all champions. Like, and knocked him out in, like, what, like 13, 14 seconds or whatever it was. Like, it's just, like, the man's got the skills. It's just, if he's willing to invest that time, like, two, three times a day in the gym, do the grappling, do the striking, do the conditioning every single day. Not just when he feels like it, or like he kind of maintains it and goes into a training camp. Like, he's got to be doing it like every single day.
So he's well on his way for a title fight.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, 100%. All right, so our last topic is an interesting one and very relevant at the moment. So obviously Francis, who is the heavyweight title winner, as we said at the start of the podcast, but he has been in a little like beef with the UFC about his pay. And basically, he said that he won't fight in the UFC again. Is that correct? And obviously, he's got that knee injury, so he was going to be out anyway.
Yeah.
But, so obviously, do you guys actually know what he got paid and, like, compared to, like, other title fighters? Like, what, like...
Well, I think he said he doesn't want to fight for 500 grand, to answer your question before. So I think, like, that will... He might have... Then the UFC might have to throw a bit of money at him. But I think the overall amount of money, not including any percentages or bonuses, was probably like the 500, 600 grand.
Yeah.
Which for the heavyweight champ is just... It's not much. It's not enough.
It's standard with... I mean, John Jones, he was the second biggest star for a while and he's only on 500K.
Yeah.
So we can't really...
It's a UFC pay structure. It's just like they don't... It's not like boxing where they just throw out like the Tyson Fury or Floyd Mayweather numbers of like $30-40 million.
But
like,
did boxing go on in what was it, April? Oh, they were ready to go in April, but it happened in May. Were they ready to go in May of 2020? No, they weren't, because the UFC is able to rent an entire island in Abu Dhabi, build all of the infrastructure, and then put on fights. Boxing will take the whole year off.
Yeah.
Because boxing is not the same as the UFC.
It's 100%. Like, it's the pros and cons of having, like Dana is like the central controlling figure of the UFC. He's like, you're able to get the fights that you want to see. Like, if we're going to use boxing, for example.
Use it more as entertainment as opposed to...
Yeah, like...
Even boxing does that as well, though, but, like, Dana just, like, literally puts on the... Like, that's why we're saying, like, oh, Conor will get a title fight after winning one, like, match or whoever he fights. And, like, there's no way that, like, anyone else gets that treatment. So it is based on the revenue that you can pull. And I think that what I find interesting with Francis is that he is an absolute bull, a freak, an absolute awesome person to watch fight. But, and he has, like, obviously a lot of fans, but not as much. No one is compared to Conor. But he still continues to be that same level of pay, which just doesn't seem to, like, actually be worthy of what he actually brings to the card.
Yeah, like with Francis, he's a really humble, like a humble human being. Like, he's gone through so much in his life, and I feel like he's not that person where he wants to put himself out there more than he has to. Like, I feel like he just wants to do his job, like train, like obviously like promote a fight, like he knows he has to do it, but like not to the like to the levels of like, oh, what Connor did. Like, he's not able to bring in those like 1-2 million pay-per-views. Like, so I can understand from the UFC perspective of not wanting to give Francis the big money, because he hasn't like ever pulled over.
It's not even about money though.
No, but like to pull over like the 700-800K like views. So like to be able to like pay him like what he wants, they've got to be able to justify it within like the means. Like, they do pay if you can bring it in. Like, they do pay. Like, they pay Nate, they pay Masvidal, they pay Connor, they paid Rousey when she was there. Like, they pay people if you bring it in.
He was offered $7 million flat rate before any pay-per-view points in order, like, as part of his new deal, new six-fight deal or whatever. But his problem is not with that. His problem is with the whole thing with the UFC is they're independent contractors. So they're not employees, which means that they don't have to pay for their... They do pay for their, like, hospital treatments or whatever afterwards, but it doesn't mean that... It means that they don't have to get...
The benefits that, like, the benefits you would get if you're an employer.
Yeah, like,
exactly.
Yeah, like, so they're subcontractors.
Exactly.
What's it called in baseball? Well, they get it in most jobs when you leave. Like, if you're in the army, if you leave, you get
the benefits for the rest of your life.
Yeah, whatever that is. Yeah. They get heaps of that in baseball.
Consistent payment for the rest of your life.
Yeah, but they don't have that in the UFC because independent contractors. But the whole thing is that they're not independent contractors. He doesn't have the option to go and box. He doesn't want $7 million. He wants the ability to be an independent
contractor. He's not getting the benefits, nor does he have no flexibility in what he can do.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like he gets the worst of both worlds. Yeah. In regards to like what, like yeah, he's like yeah, like what, like
yeah, his he benefits. Did, he did mention that his whole plan is to change the structure of contracts so they're able to give fighters more freedom to be able to do what they want to do.
And who's trying to fix that? Jake Paul. So like he has obviously been firing up some boxing matches. He's a professional boxer, knocks everyone out who he fights.
Basketballers.
You're waiting for that one too.
Yeah, literally, finally. But his recent venture is to fight for UFC pay, which obviously it's interesting to kind of like try and determine how genuine it is, whether it's just trying to overall build his hype against to do Jake Paul versus Dana White and build his image in that sense, which he's the king of, or if he actually cares. But I actually do believe that he's actually starting to care more and more. But do you think this issue with Francis is going to keep happening with other fighters? And do you reckon that could be a future problem for the UFC?
I think at the top level, so for the champions, just because they're seeing what Jake Paul's doing with Tyron Woodley and like a boxer and like a retired fighter, like he's able to get these guys $1 million paychecks. Like, and they're like, we've been training for 15, 20 years. This guy's been training for what, 3? And he's getting like multi-$1 million paychecks. So he's kind of shining a light to, firstly, not like on the UFC, like he is a little bit, but he's also showing fighters like create a persona, like make yourself like marketable.
Make yourself your own entity before, like don't be just a fighter.
Like people get all like up in their feelings, like especially the UFC fighters when they're like talking shit, like Conor, guys like Conor have like split personality. Chael Sonnen's like that too, like where they talk the shit, but that's not who they actually are as human beings. Like they're doing it to market themselves so people get eyeballs, either for a win or a loss. Floyd did exactly the same thing in boxing. Like you split your personalities,
and you become a celebrity, not just a fighter.
Yes, and when you're a celebrity, you get more eyes, and that's how you make more money. So he's showing fighters this is what you can do to be able to make more money, but he's also like shining a light onto how like bad some of these UFC contracts are for the top guys who make like at the lower level they make like more money than a lower level boxer would. But at the top level, like they're not making like the amounts that like a boxer was. Although the pay like structure is completely different, but he's just shining a light to like you guys need to like you guys need to pay. You
got to look out for yourselves. Yeah, there can be a different.
I'm gonna take some of your fighters and fight them. Like Nate's got one fight left on his deal. Well, you don't think Nate would fight Jake Paul for $10-15 million?
Of course he wouldn't.
And Jake would win as well.
And Nate's gonna bring and Nate will bring a million pay per views just from being a Diaz. Yeah. Like, and then Jake's gonna have his followers watch it too. So that could be like a $2-3 million.
Do you think that's actually an issue for boxing, or do you reckon they'll just get them later on in their career when it's just like like the Ben Askren or the Woodley, literally just like, oh, it's my last paycheck out and then I'm done.
No, but it'll just shine a light for some of these fighters that are seeing the guys at the end making more money than they ever did when they were actually in their prime as a professional. So it's going to shine a light to like why aren't the people in their prime getting appreciated now, but they are at the end of their career. Like,
yeah.
So someone like Woodley, he's getting the most money that he's probably ever made in an individual fight in the last 2 Jake Paul fights. And if you're going to tell Tyron Woodley, you're going to have like 4 or 5 title fights and you're going to make the most money fighting Jake Paul. Like you wouldn't like he would be like, nah, like you're joking, like no chance. Like there's no chance ever gonna happen. Like so he's just like, and he's just shining a light like to the problems. Disruptor. Yeah, and he's got that ability to where I don't like Dana can usually deal with people.
I'll quickly say that Christopher Mangos is Jake Paul's biggest fan. Like watched all his vlogs.
Slow down there, buddy. So Jake's done a good job at like just antagonizing Dana White. And, like, not many people can do a good job of antagonizing Dana White.
I don't think... Dana doesn't really bite, let's be honest.
No, he's bitten. He's bitten a couple of times.
He can't help himself. He's because he's such a roided up meat.
Yeah, he's bitten on it. He's definitely bitten on it. And Jake... And, like, you can't outdo... Like, this is what... That's what Jake does for a living, is, like, taking the piss. So there's no way you're going to be able to outtake the piss out of Jake Paul. Like, it's not going to happen. But he's doing, like... He's showing a way for fighters to make more money. Like it's actually like it's weird because he's still like a
man. How is he showing people how to make more money?
Marketing. He's a master. Exactly. Marketer.
He's showing people how to market, but
yeah, but that's like that's most
he's
of it.
He's getting
like,
people to think that they should be paid more than they really do.
So he's a superhero.
People don't come in with 20 million followers like Jake.
Jake Paul is a superhero. I'm solid.
No, but it's like it's not like coming in with the 20 million followers. It's just like showing a way.
That's
to
how
be
you
able,
make money, though. That's yeah, how you sell.
It's showing a way, though.
So he's like, showing a blueprint.
Yeah, he's showing a blueprint.
He's definitely showing a blueprint.
Like, to create to create like a following where you get 20 million followers.
But he's hardly a savior. Guys. He's hardly saving the OC just by potting Dana all the time.
I wouldn't call him a savior, but I would. Yeah, because you love the bloke. But he's showing a way. Like Connor did it, but people didn't want to do it because people were like. Like they saw GSP, like for example, he was like the respectful, like shake your hand, like at the press conference, like really nice guy. Like they also brought in eyes because you got had all of Canada watching him, so everyone thought they could do that. But that doesn't sell unless you're like GSP, and not many people are GSP.
Yeah,
like Connor's provided an actual blueprint. If you can pull it off, it's really hard to do by talking shit and knocking people out or just winning fights. Talking shit and winning fights. It's the way you get more eyes because you get people who want to see you lose and people who want to see you win. So you get the best of both worlds. It's a great marketing tactic. And I feel like more fighters like they just don't want to do it because they want to be like they've got the martial art, like we need
to
respect.
The fighter. Yeah.
Respect your opponent, like no like trash talking or anything like that. We don't need to do that. We're settling in the cage, we're men, like now, we're men and women. Like
now with social media you just have to just talk.
Yeah,
you need to put as much content out there as possible.
You need to keep yourself in the news. So like you see like Connor does it too. Connor's great at it as well. Like they'll just say outrageous stuff and you'll know like they're talking shit. But it's all about just like keeping your name in the press. So like it's just constantly lingering there.
What Connor just said.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That, yeah.
Exactly. Or just like if we go back to Jake Paul, it's like listen to what like
Magos. He actually just can't get enough of Jake Paul.
Like he says like how he's like the Ali of his generation.
Yeah.
Like that's outrageous. Like,
and you know that he doesn't believe it, but he's merely saying to get on the news.
And he's getting it to antagonize people, and that's what the MMA media has been sucked into it. Like they can't stop talking about him. And that's exactly what he wants. He's winning. He's got him in the palm of his hand.
He's
like,
such a genius. He's such a genius.
Yeah, he's got him all like talking after every card they go, oh, did you see like what Jake Paul said or like about Dana White or something like that after a fight, and it's like
after like a title fight.
Yeah,
it's
the
like,
fighters
look what Jake Paul said.
The fighters are sitting there like, why are you asking me a Jake Paul question?
Yeah.
But like, that's the type of stuff.
And Dana's rages when like he gets asked about Jake Paul. He's like, just fires up.
It's the type of stuff people have to do though to be able to create a following and get people invested, even if it's winning or losing. Like that's how you create like eyes and how you create more people coming to watch you fight and get more money. So he's showing a blueprint. He's interesting. He's interesting.
Yeah.
Hopefully, he can actually fight a real boxer. But it's interesting.
He was supposed to fight a real boxer, though.
What, Tommy Fury's
a
real boxer.
Oh, how isn't he?
Have you seen, like, some of
it
the...
Is
like,
a Fury,
have you seen, like, the record of, like, his opponents he's fought? It's, like, 10 and, like, 100 and
I don't know if there is a win in, like, between all five of them.
Yeah, it's,
not one professional win.
Yeah, it's, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, the overall record between all of his opponents is, like, 10 and 150 or something like that. It's, like, he's... Like, I think that's going to be his next fight. I think that would be his next fight. And then if he wins that, he probably gets Diaz at the end of his contract.
That'd be nice.
Or Masvidal.
No, Masvidal's still got contracts.
How much contract?
Yeah. He shouldn't be.
I think he's still got a couple fights left on his deal. So I think it's like pretty like a year
I'm
or two.
I'm off Masvidal.
No, maybe any more losses and Masvidal gets cut.
No, I don't. They're not going to cut him, man. He brings too much money. But Nate and Jake Paul would be hilarious because Jake would try to talk that shit and Nate's not about it. Like,
no.
Nate would generally roll with 20 of his boys.
He's too dumb.
He's a true gangster.
He's a true meathead and he would literally slap him on the stage if he was talking shit. Like 100%.
Last bit, who wins that fight? Nate, Jack?
Nate won't get knocked out. Although that's what we said about Ben Askren, because Ben Askren doesn't get, apart from George Masvidal. But that would have knocked out a mule.
But
that knee from George Masvidal. Ben Askren doesn't get rocked. I mean, he fought Robbie Lawler.
Please pick Jake Paul.
Nate's a zombie. Like Nate doesn't go down. So I would like, and Nate can box. So I would go with Nate.
But we would say that.
I'm taking Jake Paul.
But it would be really, that'd be a great like lead up fight. like press conference, and like they'd have numerous amount of them. Like Nate would bring Nick and like and all of like the Stockton boys, and like
Jake would
bring his brother and like whoever else he hangs out with, and they would just carry on. Like it'd be good to watch.
All right, well, thank you very much, boys. It's absolutely
thank you.
Been a long time fan.
Yeah, right,
absolutely.
And to all our listeners, I hope that I helped with one, just a few nice little anecdotes, but also just give you a bit of a crash course on the UFC, and I'll see you on Sunday for the next fight. What's the next card?
Jack Hermanson is fighting.
Oh no,
Jack Hermanson. Is that
yeah, and Sean Strickland.
Sean Strickland.
But that's not exactly.
We need to stop. We're stopping. But thank you very much, boys. You guys were absolutely brilliant. Well spoken.
My pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
We'll see you for the next episode of The Landing.
Absolutely.